San Diego's talk radio leader, 760 KFMB presents It's Your Money and Your Life. For the next hour, Richard Muzio and Joe Vecchio will educate and inform you on matters related to your financial future, your life, and your leisure. Now, with It's Your Money and Your Life, here are Richard and Joe.
All right, good evening, everybody. My name is Joe Vecchio, your co-host, announcer, and producer. Welcome to It's Your Money and Your Life. With your being heard, we're being heard with 50,000 watts of power, not just in San Diego County, but Orange County, LA County, up the coast of Seattle on a good night, down to Cabo, out to the desert. And if you have an app for 760 AM KFMB, you can hear us there. And we also stream live on 760KFMB.com. And now time to introduce the main man of the hour. He's a CPA extraordinaire. He is a best-selling author. He's an accomplished marathon runner. And he's a family office expert advising several high-net-worth families. His name is Richard Muzio. Richard, good evening. How are you tonight?
I am marvelous, Joe. It's great to be here, as always.
Boy, we have a VIP show today, don't we? So we can't dispense with too much introductory remarks.
No, but I'm going to mention UCSD, also known as UC San Diego, because on Saturday morning, I ran the Triton 5K with close to about 3,000 other people through the beautiful campus up there on the hill.
Benefiting what? Something at the school?
Benefiting something at the school, I would imagine, one of the funds, their scholarship funds there, I'm imagining.
And that's where I...
But what a gorgeous place to run a 5K.
Yeah, it is. I ran my first 10K there years ago, and definitely have to get back on the running path, but it was and is a beautiful campus, so it's a real gem and a jewel. But without further delay, Richard, let's get into it.
Let's do it, Joe.
We've been anticipating this guest for a long, long time. He's probably the hardest guest for us to book, but he is the 8th chancellor of UCSD, and his name is Pradeep Khosla. Pradeep, welcome to our show.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you, Richard.
I was going to go over your credentials and CV, but I would probably take up the first quarter of the hour. But I mean, you have done it all. You've obviously an expert in robotics, engineering, and computer science, and have advised several companies in the private sector. And going on to a great academic distinction, 3 books, 350 articles. So, as a young boy growing up in India, did you ever in your wildest imagination dream you would be a chancellor of one of the premier educational institutions in the world?
You know, I absolutely did not. In fact, as a young boy growing up, I used to be in trouble more often than not, and I did not even think I'd be an educator.
Funny. What part of India are you from?
I grew up in Bombay. I was brought up in Bombay all my life,
now
but
Bombay.
I'm from North India, Punjab. So,
sure. Okay,
that's the language I speak.
But now, at age 25, you made a decision to come to the U.S. Now, did you do that on your own, or did family come over here? Or because that's kind of a quantum leap, isn't it?
Right. No, I did that on my own. So I finished my bachelor's degree at 23, and I said I work in India, and I started working for a couple of years, and I just absolutely hated it. Did not like it. I applied to U.S. universities, and I applied to a couple of scholarships, and then I got lucky. So
it worked out. So then your path from there, when you came, you went to Carnegie Mellon right away, or?
Right. You know. So, you know, what's interesting is I got admitted to 3 places, and I picked Carnegie Mellon because of 2 reasons. One is I had a friend out there from my college. And then second was this professor bio said he worked in the area of computer control of power systems.
Mm-hmm.
And in 82, I had figured out that power systems were going to be controlled by computers sooner or later. So that's what I wanted to do.
Huh.
So I come to Carnegie Mellon, and this professor tells me that that was 2 years ago that he used to do that work. He doesn't do it anymore. Now, remember, this is before the internet, right?
Right.
So sending snail mail took like 2 weeks to get to you, then and people did not print pages as often as or booklets as often as, you know. So I said, okay, I'll figure something out.
So then you got your master's there, your doctorate at Carnegie Mellon. Is that where is that school? I'm not even
sure. In Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania?
Pittsburgh, okay.
You should know where it is. It's one of the top places in the country.
Well, Carnegie, duh. I should have known that. Well, I'm glad I'm not taking that
class. But I noticed you also received a degree from the Indian Institute of Technology, which is probably the premier.
Right. So that is the premier place, at least when I went there. So they used to have an entrance exam, and they would pick only 1,200 students a year out of, like, 150,000.
Right, exactly. Like
1%. And this IIT I went to was the first IIT ever. So it was, like, 1957.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Huh, huh, huh.
Well, and then you how does the process work to become chancellor of UCSD? And obviously you were already – you had a prestigious position at Carnegie Mellon. Hmm. And I'm not sure – do they put out an announcement that they're looking? And
Or do you get recruited for that kind of position? Or what?
You know, so – at that level, you always get recruited because the saying in academia is that if you want a position, they'll never give it to you. So you have to not want something for you to get it. And you have to play hard to get. Now, I know it takes us back to being 18 or 17 or whatever, right? But that's just the way it is. So all positions, I think, at the level of dean and above are basically recruited most of the time, as in there's a search committee that the campus or the university puts in place. There's usually a search firm you hire, not always. But for chancellor, 99.99% of the time, you would hire a search firm, and then they go out and...
So the regents basically take that on, right?
And that's right. Because the problem is that... the reason is that anybody and everybody who you would want to be interested in that job already is happy wherever he or she is, mm-hmm. right? So nobody's going to get up and apply unless you show some love. So you got to So that's what the search firm is paid for.
So that process, I mean, it must be an enormous process. Do you have any idea how many candidates were involved, or how long did that whole process take?
Probably took I have no idea, but I can tell it's done in, like, utmost secrecy. Mm-hmm. But having said that, since coming to UC San Diego, I've done, like, 4 searches, and I can tell you what happens. Mm-hmm. So now I know how the
process goes.
How it works. So typically you would have, I don't know, anywhere from 60 to 80 or 100 candidates, and you would boil it down to, like, 20 or 25 candidates that the committee would look at very seriously, mm-hmm. which you would boil it down to like 8 to 12 that would be interviewed at the in the first interview. It's called the airport interview.
Okay. Uh-huh.
And then after that, maybe 2 or 3.
So how many interviews did you have to go through? Probably several, huh?
Yeah, it's amazing. So the lower the level of position, the more the interviews. The higher the position.
Interesting.
So I had to go through only 1 interview.
Really?
But if you're applying for assistant professor at UC San Diego, we will abuse you for 2 days we decide whether you're going to get the job
or not. So you followed Marianne Faulks. Is there any overlap in terms of the terms so that she could at least show you where the paper clips were or something in the office, or they just throw you into the chancellor's office?
No, they just throw you in. But I tell you what, I've been fortunate because so I accepted in May and I joined in August.
Okay.
Right, so the 2.5 months, I'd come here like every couple of weeks, and Marianne was extremely helpful and supportive and in the transition. And in addition, Bob Dines, mm-hmm. who was before her, and Dick Atkinson, who was before him, are also around on campus, and they were also, and they are still, extremely supportive mm-hmm. and helpful.
Hmm.
Great.
Excellent. So we're going to get more into your personal history and the history of UCSD and then where you're going to take it from here, in a few minutes. So the other question was, I know I wanted to talk about energy on the campus, and you mentioned, your former colleague was working on energy. You're one of the most efficient energy campuses in the country, isn't that correct?
Yeah, I would say most sustainable rather than efficient, because I don't know if we are the most efficient, but we are the most sustainable.
Well, I know you produce at least 85% of your own.
Yeah, I read 85% to 90%.
Yeah, we do. We produce about 85% to 90% of our energy. If you walk around campus, you would see 2 things. One is this big power plant. It's a cogen mm-hmm. plant, and then every parking garage has solar panels on top of it.
The cogen plant runs on what, a natural gas or
right? It does.
Okay, and then you have the fuel cell, the largest fuel cell on any campus in the country, from what I understand.
That's right, to store the electricity that we
2.8 megawatts, I think.
That's right, and we have the best person in this area working with us, Byron Washam. He is also working with Larry Allison on mm-hmm. his island and making that sustainable.
Wow. And not to mention the big sunflower that you have out there. There's a big solar sunflower. But anyway, we're going to take a little break right now. We're going to come right back with the 8th Chancellor of UCSD, Pradeep Khosla, right after this. Hang on.
Now, it's your money and your life on AM 760 KFMB.
All right, we're back with the 8th Chancellor of UCSD, Pradeep Khosla. And one question I meant to ask was, had you been to San Diego before, Pradeep? And
many times.
Oh, okay.
You know, it's one of the most sought-after destinations for conferences and vacations. And,
yeah. Well, I think that's probably part of the reason why the university exploded. You know, after it was built, I think it became such a desirable location that it attract. You got to admit the climate and scenic area does attract people who want to come and work here, study here, research here. Right.
But I have to tell you, like the way I look at UC San Diego, the way I describe its quality is, I tell people if UC San Diego was in North Dakota, I would go to UC San Diego. That's how high quality a place it is.
Well, we asked her when Jake was when he was on the show. I said, you know, you hear all this criticism that it's very difficult to grow a business in California and in our region. And I said, you must have made a conscious decision to keep Qualcomm here. He goes, oh, absolutely. It was definitely a factor. He knew how nice it is here.
No, it is absolutely nice. And I can tell you when we were first created, I'm sure the city and the climate played a very big role in attracting top-notch people.
Yeah.
But right now, we are such a high-quality place, top 10 in the world,
yeah,
that I think we could be placed anywhere and people would come.
Yeah, I think so. Now, you've been to the White House a couple of times now, right?
Right.
and you're going back when, next week again?
I'm supposed to, but unfortunately I cannot, so okay. I have to say no to the president.
Okay. So the first time you went was...
A lot of people do that, by the way.
Yeah. So the two reasons you went to the White House were?
So the first time I was invited was when the president was going to announce the BRAIN Initiative, and it turns out that the two of the six authors of the white paper that he used to announce this initiative and to motivate himself are from UC San Diego.
Hmm. Craig Venter, maybe?
Ralph Greenspan was one of them, and the other faculty members both joined between Salk and UC San Diego. And this was great. So he wanted to make sure that the chancellors of all the universities that were playing a key role in this were there. So I was there in the front row, right underneath where he was speaking, like literally, I could touch him. If I extended my arm, I could touch him. and I had a name on the chair, so which is amazing.
Wow. Right.
So I call that an immigrant moment, you know, for somebody to have immigrated to this country and to get that opportunity, I think is amazing. So,
yeah, absolutely.
And how is the Brain Mapping Center coming? I mean,
what we did is, you know, we already have for many years now, more than two or three decades, a great capability in neurosciences. We were the campus or the university that created the whole notion of cognitive science, and we defined the first cognitive science department in the country. So we have great capability in that area, but we never quite put it together and thought about brain mapping. So this initiative basically forced us to act, and we created the Brain Mapping Center. And I think by the time this airs, we would even have a little project from the state.
Huh.
Wow.
So is that akin to what the Genome Project was? We're mapping the brain the way we did the Genome Project, or is it somewhat similar?
You know, as a novice, as somebody who doesn't work in the area, that's the way I like to think about it, and that's the way I like to explain it to people. I think, so if you think about all the diseases that afflict human beings and humanity, people would say, like, the deadliest was cancer, right? Because if you had cancer, that was like a death sentence. But over the last, 25 years or so, we've made a great progress in cancer, right? We understand what cancer is. Not all of it, but a lot of cancer. Many forms of cancer we've been able to deal with. Now, by that very same token, mental disorders and mental disease, we don't understand, right? So, for example, Alzheimer's, but take depression, right? If you and I both have depression of some sort or the other, the probability the same cocktail of medication works on the two of us is pretty low, actually. And it's all trial and error. So we don't even understand how medication works, how it affects the pathways and the neurons and so on and so forth. So I think brain, in my mind, is the next frontier. Now, remember, when we were growing up, space was the next frontier. Then the deep ocean was the next frontier. I think brain is the least understood of all the body organs. So I'm excited about this. I think we can change the fate of humanity if we do this right.
Yeah, and Joe, you and I went to Needham a couple months ago at UC San Diego about using supercomputers to, for example, do a much better job of identifying medications that are on the market to treat certain issues that are specific to the particular patient.
And I didn't understand much. It was
no,
very
but it was
complex.
Right. There's some really bright people in the room, that's for sure.
But that's another area we are focusing on. So that whole area is called personalized medicine.
Yeah, personalized medicine.
So
yeah.
I was on a panel recently at the Milken Conference with Michael Milken. He was moderating the panel, and Governor Brown was on the panel. And one of the points I was making was we should focus on the brain as the next thing for personalized medicine or mental disorders. Mm-hmm. I think these are silent killers. I mean, families that have depression
Absolutely.
Have issues. Mm-hmm.
Well, definitely affects.
Cannot talk about
it affects 20% of us. And we had one of your alumna on last week, Dr. Krista Roybal. She's mm-hmm. a psychiatrist right here in UTC, and we talked about. She's taking a holistic approach. I mean, there's all kinds of neat things, but. You know, that coupled with the medicine, I think we should be making some great progress, hopefully, soon.
So, it will take a lot of time, but I hope it's not 100 years. I hope it's like 10, 20 years. Well, but I think we'll do it.
Well, at the rate of information, that supercomputer on your campus, when was that built? And is there anything else like it in the States?
You know, I can't remember when was it built, but I can tell you this was part of the U.S. Federal government strategy to build supercomputing, and there were several campuses in the country that had that. Illinois had it or has it. Carnegie Mellon had it. San Diego. These were the leading places. And then there were the DOE labs that had it. And this is around the time, I think, when we were trying to stop testing nuclear weapons. And the whole idea was looking back, was that we already had the capability to test the weapons in simulation, so we did not need to explode the weapons. So we were telling the world that we were going to stop exploding weapons, right? Mm-hmm. But we were testing them in simulation, and for that you needed the supercomputing capability.
Wow. See all that good stuff that comes out of government research, Richard?
Yeah.
It happens.
You know, people, people don't appreciate government research. I think if you look at the whole economy of this country, were it not for government research starting World War I, World War II, we would not be as powerful an economy as we are right now. So I think we owe a lot to the federal research.
Well, the internet came out of DARPA, correct?
Yeah. And I spent 3 years at DARPA, and that's where the internet was invented, and it came out of purely government research, and that to military research for the military components to talk to each other. And now you cannot imagine a world without the internet.
Right, exactly. So speaking of economy, do you have estimates as to what effect on the local San Diego economy UC San Diego has?
So let me tell you about UC San Diego. So we are about a $3.8 billion campus, of which $1 billion is research money. If I look at our impact, I think it's about $9 to $10 billion of impact on the economy. And it is actually looked at it differently. It's much bigger because out of this $3.8 billion budget, only about $280 million comes from the state.
Okay.
So we take $280 million, we multiply that to $3.8 billion, of which about $2 billion is payroll. So if you take a 7% state tax, approximately, so 140 goes back to the state. So we are getting about $140 million to educate about 30,000 students. And then we have close to a $10 billion impact in San Diego.
And then you look at the financial impact to San Diego of all of the alum who've come out of there, who've created businesses and so on, obviously Qualcomm maybe being the most famous.
And Qualcomm's
had a lot of you can't even list them.
Yeah, they've had a lot of spin-off businesses to Qualcomm. But all the biotech and everything, it's got to be substantial, right?
Right. So I think without UC San Diego would not have the biotech industry it does.
I agree. I don't think we would. It wouldn't be possible.
Well, how about the craft brew industry, Richard? That
too.
That too, exactly.
But But that's all biology.
Yes.
Or in chemistry.
Well, the fellow, I think, is one of your graduates, White Labs, right. created that yeah. special yeast that all these.
Exactly.
Now you have 84, at least 84 craft breweries in this town, and it's like a $600 or $800 million industry, mm-hmm. that alone. And that just happened recently. So.
Right, last 5 years yes. or 10 years.
Okay. Yeah, I'll drink to that. So. But anyway, we cut up on our break here. Justin, listen, we got to take our break. We'll come right back with the second half of It's Your Money and Your Life with Pradeep Khosla, the Chancellor of UCSD, right after this. Hang on.
Now, It's Your Money and Your Life on AM 760 KFMB.
All right, we're back with the second half of It's Your Money and Your Life. And now over to Richard to thank our sponsors.
Thank you to our sponsors, including, I'm going to include all of them, right, Joe? UBS, Mr. Michael Caranta and Drew Freitas. UBS on Prospect Street, also in lovely La Jolla, just like UC San Diego, a little bit down the hill. Across the street from UBS, the best business bank here in San Diego, Regions Bank, Sean Puckett and Steve Sefton, helping business owners achieve their dreams. Jason Kruger, Signature Analytics, best CFO company here in San Diego. My great friend, Joel Grushkin, with Cost Segregation Initiatives. I'm going to be presenting with Joel next week at an event in La Costa. Joel helps real estate owners improve their cash flow. Our favorite CPAs on the planet and recent guest, Paul Polito, CPA, and Don Epic, CPA, with Polito Epic CPAs up in Vista. Law offices of Brenda Geiger. I presented at a continuing education event she had at an amazing place last Friday, the Museum of Making Music up in Carlsbad. Asset protection and estate planning, Brenda Geiger, attorney at law. And last but not least, Carl Sheeler with Berkeley Research Group, best business valuation resource actually in this country, in my opinion. Carl and I actually presented this past Tuesday at the San Diego Bar Association. And Carl helps business owners improve the value of their businesses by better understanding the risks that drive those values. So great roster of sponsors. And Joe, our listeners can find out a lot about our sponsors where?
Well, if they just fire up their computer or smartphone and type in iymoney.com, all of the sponsors are there. There's a cursor. Put your cursor above sponsors. There's a drop-down menu, and all of their personal information and contact information is there. And they've all worked with you, Richard, for many, many years with great success.
Right? For over 20 years. I don't want to admit how old I am.
Collaboration.
Absolutely.
Instead of location,
it's
like
all
real
about,
estate.
It's about who you know and what they know. So,
anyway, we are back with the chancellor here. And
I want to get back to the economy.
Yes, the economy, and then we'll get into the history of the university.
Yeah, because a lot of people suggest that maybe the cost of college at a UC program is too high. Yet I think when you look at the benefits that originate out of everything that happens, not only at UC San Diego, but the system in general, how do you view that cost-benefit equation, Chancellor Khosla?
So I think both assertions are true, that to a family the cost of education is high is mm-hmm. a true assertion. And that a university like UC San Diego has significant impact on the economy is also true. Mm-hmm. I think the problem is that when the state starts believing that they are paying too much for education is when the problem starts, because at the end of the day, there is a fixed cost that has to be paid to educate somebody properly. And it's the division between the state and the individual which causes a problem. Mm-hmm. My view is, and if you run the numbers, I think the state tends to benefit significantly more because of a R1 university like UC San Diego in the state than it is willing to admit or wants to admit. And I think the state support for higher education has to go up.
Well, people have to see the big picture. I mean, a more educated society should be a better, more successful, happier society, right?
Right. So, look, I'm not an economist, but I can tell you the following. So if you look at the history of education out here, education was literally a way towards upward mobility. Mm-hmm. You came back from World War II.
The American dream.
Mm-hmm. Right. And if you got educated, including junior college, there was some way to go upward in your economic status. The problem, or the good thing then was, this was a growing economy. The middle class was growing. The economy was growing. There was a lot of wealth being generated. The problem I see right now, and I must tell your listeners, I'm not an economist. I'm just like an armchair economist. The problem I see right now is the economy is not growing as fast as it was then. And even when it's growing, it is a few people that are benefiting a lot more, i.e., the middle class is shrinking. Mm-hmm. And that's what causes the big issue, where suddenly people are questioning the value of education because they have taken a loan in anticipation of getting a job to pay it off. And they, when they don't get a job to pay it off, they start questioning the fundamental thesis of education or the fundamental value of education. So,
but dollar for dollar, I mean, a student at UCSD pays about, what, $5,000-$6,000 a year compared to some other private schools there? I mean,
so I can, right, so I can tell you. So our tuition for in-state tuition, in-state students is about $13,000. More than 50% of our students get Cal grants, blue and gold. They don't pay tuition. More than 50% of our students don't pay tuition. And then we have a one-third towards aid policy where a third of our tuition collected goes back to student financial aid.
Okay.
Right? So the net tuition then is very low. It's less than half of $13,000. Compare that to $45,000 to $50,000 per year in a elite private place, which would be comparable to UC San Diego.
Yeah, well, I personally would caution any student who goes to college because they have an expectation of getting a job or a career that they might want to look at the matter a little bit more broadly. I think the whole point is to become educated and more capable of being able to be a valuable contributor to your community as opposed to...
And to the democracy.
And to the democracy, exactly.
Right.
Right.
Unless they have a direct, and I don't know how many kids have this, but if they know exactly what career path they want to follow and know the professional school they want to get in, whether it's veterinary medicine or something like that, you know...
But things change now so quickly in the economy, Joe. I mean, I think skills like learning how to become better at innovation and so on, I think universities have to get better at anticipating future changes in the world and in the economy, as opposed to just teaching kids how to go into a more traditional career like accounting, for example.
And what I've seen is I think most of the time the parents know what their kids should be doing more than the kids. And I think this is also very different than when you and I were growing up, where we had a lot more freedom.
Right.
And I think we need to get back to the point where the kids are allowed to explore and experiment and grow.
Well, tuition, I know someone graduated UCSD, his debt is set with $7,000. You know, it used to be very inexpensive. I guess it was subsidized by the state, and I don't know when that all changed. I guess when Governor Reagan was in office, a lot of things changed as far as that structure. Isn't that correct?
Or? I think about 5 or 6 years ago, around 2008, 2009, when the economy tanked, that's when it took the biggest hit. The UC system's always taken a hit every so often, but I think this one was the worst, and we took like close to a 33% budget cut.
But back in the day, it was like $700 a quarter, right, for a student, something like that.
Right, because the state was paying the bill. Here, when you take a 33% cut, somebody's got to pay for it, and the burden falls on the students and their family. And this is an important notion, right? So let me put this in perspective. The median income in this country for a family of four is about $52,000.
Right, just over $50,000.
Right? You take taxes away, you take home about $35,000 or maybe $40,000 at most. And if you have to pay, like, I don't know, let's say you have to pay no tuition, but just $20,000 of living expenses out of a $40,000 take home, that is a big number. And you, Richard, who's got three kids in college, I mean, you'd be bankrupt.
I might be.
But now college debt is the only loan that you cannot discharge in bankruptcy. So that happened in 05. Don't ask me why. But do you feel the online education is going to make a big impact or difference?
I think online education has a role to play because the generation that's coming up is very attuned to the digital lifestyle.
Sure.
But I think to believe that online education is going to make education free would be a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And it certainly doesn't replace the experience of being amongst peers on a college campus.
Yeah, I mean, certainly the collaborative piece of being physically present with other people in a room
and the
or
social
on a campus.
Benefits,
that's exactly right. And a lot of growth happens by just interacting with people.
Right, it's the relationships all, that form. And
so that age of 18 to 22, the learning is not just history and geography and science. It's also interacting with people. It's learning by watching other people. Mm-hmm. It's emotional growth. It's spiritual growth. It's a whole bunch of growth strategies.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly a company like Qualcomm, for example, the relationships that were formed up on that hill in the day.
And there's clubs.
Tremendous
and
contributor to what, right. what that
and
valuable thing
And there's
thing
athletics
became.
And music and extracurriculars
exactly.
That really round out your experience
That's
at
right.
college, though. So, but anyway, we're going to be in the home stretch here. We're going to take our last break. We'll be right back with the Chancellor of UCSD, Pradeep Khosla, right after this.
Now, it's your money and your life on AM 760 KFMB.
All right, we are back with the home stretch of It's Your Money, Your Life. We're chatting with the 8th Chancellor of UCSD, Pradeep Khosla. And I think Richard had some questions, and his daughter Mia is here, about affordability.
Yeah, we got a couple guests in studio. We have Brooke Williamson from UCSD.
Correct.
Communications Director, I believe. I apologize if I've got your title wrong. A couple of students coming up, new students at UCSD. My daughter Mia, who's soon to be 22, and her boyfriend Scott are in studio. But my daughter Mia actually has a question for Chancellor Khosla.
My dad is soon to have 3 children in college at once, including me at UC San Diego. How are you working on the issue of college affordability?
Yes, please help.
Mia, that's a good question. So the good news is that I'm working on the issue of college affordability. The bad news is that I'm not working on it for people like your dad. I'm working on it for students, young men and women who come from low-income families, and let's just say students who are qualified for the Blue and Gold Plan, which is families that make less than $80,000 a year.
And we, for example, had Christopher Yanoff on our show last year from Reality Change, a good example of, I think, the demographic area that these students are coming from, are represented by his program, great program.
Right. So one of the things we did last year was we created this program called Chancellor's Associate Program. In this program, we picked Lincoln, Gompers, and Preuss, these three mm-hmm. high schools, City College, Imperial Valley College, and Southwestern College, and Reality Changers. If you are from any one of these places and you get admitted to UC San Diego and you qualify for Blue and Gold, which just about everybody does, my promise to these students is they would go to UC San Diego for free, i.e., they will have no loans when they graduate mm-hmm. after 2 or 4 years, depending on where they come from. And this is a very strong promise, and I'm able to do this because the local community is helping me raise the money, and every year we raise more than $1 million. But to do this right, we need $4 million a year steady state, and I can guarantee you the community will step up and make sure that there's a way for us to take care of our kids in the community.
And these students must be very highly academically qualified, right, and motivated.
I mean. Yeah, so we... what I say is if you're admitted on your own, as in we have like a two-part admissions process. The admissions process is need blind. So we admit based on your capability. Mm-hmm. And after you're admitted, there's a financial aid package that is put together based on your family's need. And me, I can tell you, your dad has no need.
How many applications do you get every year?
He may have a want, but he has no need.
You've got how many kids in college?
So Pradeep, how many applications do you folks get every year? Must be several thousand. Huh?
Yeah, we get, I'm sorry, I'm blanking out on the number, but I would say between 70, 75,000 applications this year. Just for like 4,500 positions.
Well,
yeah, it's becoming extremely competitive. So,
can we switch the topic to more of a visionary one? I know, obviously, being in the position of chancellor, you're responsible for the overall speed and direction and vision of the university. First question before we go there is coming out of academia or coming out of a background in engineering, for example. How have you put yourself in a position where you've developed the skills and skill set to, for example, become more of a leader now that you're a chancellor as opposed to, shall we say, a technician, which is more of an engineer?
That's a bad word for an engineer.
I know it is. But.
So I think by trade I might be an engineer. But having been educated in this country, one of the things I learned, which is part of just about every education that we deliver, is critical thinking, critical and analytical skills, and problem solving. And so when I look at issues in day-to-day life, either as chancellor or in my interaction with people, I think about just about everything in the problem-solving paradigm. So if you and I don't get along, to me, it doesn't make you a bad person or make me a better person. To me, there's a problem here, and how are we going to solve mm-hmm. it? So that's the way I look at everything.
We'll solve it with brain mapping.
Brain mapping.
It would help, trust me. It would help, right?
But
so your vision for the university, I mean, obviously it's a highly creative, effective place to be. When you look at UC San Diego 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 20 years from now, what do you think it will look like?
I think it would look like what it is right now, one of the top places mm-hmm. in the world, except that it would be doing different things than it is doing right now. It might be doing things differently than it's doing right now. So I can imagine technology-enhanced learning and MOOCs would be common-day way of doing business. I can imagine new forms of research taking shape out here. I can imagine us defining fields of the future, like brain mapping would be one. I can imagine our departments, and we have very strong departments of humanities and arts. I can imagine them taking a big role in understanding the disparity that we create as a human race between individuals and between societies, and how do we address that?
Actually, Richard, there's an Arthur C. Clarke Center for Human Imagination on the campus.
I know there is. I'm aware of that.
So maybe they'll be determining some of the direction too, right?
I mean, and that's a center which is a great example of strong collaboration between the arts, humanities, and engineering.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a lot of people don't know you have some. I looked at your UCSD EDU website, and I saw there's a, you call it MOOC, a massive online course that anyone can take through extension or?
That's exactly right. We have several. In fact, one of the courses that I know of, because Steve Mayfield, my good friend, developed it, is in the area of energy.
Yeah, the future.
Energy future,
yeah.
Right. And you can take it, and it's a great course.
Yeah. And I saw Charlie Kennell, you're doing one about climate change and its impact.
Yeah, we have many courses, many such courses. You know, we have, so for example, if you look at our composition, the Scripps Institution of Oceanography, which is part of UC San Diego, is the leading place in the world in climate change mm-hmm. and oceanography. And we want to be able to take what we have learned, what we are learning, and disseminate it.
Mm-hmm.
To people of all ages, young men and women, to people like us.
So I commend everybody out there, get on their website, UCSD.edu, and see what's available to you, what piques your curiosity and interest. Now, you have a business school there that just started up recently.
The Rady School of Business is about 10 years old.
Yeah.
And again, it is an amazing history. It's an amazing history because our founding dean, Bob Sullivan, who I've known for like more than 20 years, he was with me at Carnegie Mellon, and then we separated and we are back again, has done a tremendous job of building a school from scratch. And let me tell you, building a business school is not easy. Building a business school is very difficult, and I am proud of the fact that Bob Sullivan in 10 years has built a school that is constantly and consistently going up in rankings.
Mm-hmm.
He's positioned us in this, in my mind, the sweet spot of the intersection of technology and business.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we will be, we are on our way to being leaders in that area.
Yeah.
And we've been helped greatly by the generosity of Ernest Rady mm-hmm. and many people who support Ernest Rady.
Mm-hmm.
And because of his generosity, we've had the resources to do things that the state did not give us the resources to.
Well, Chancellor Costa, we have to close it right there, but thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Very much appreciated.
We're going to actually stick around for a few more minutes, and you can catch the bonus track on our website, iymoney.com. But we'd like to thank you for being our guest tonight. And thank you to Justin Hart for making us sound good, our sound engineer. Thank you to Mia, Scott, and Brooke for being
here. Mia, you made your radio debut.
And also thanks to Dave Smith, our programming genius, and Craig Blanke, our account executive. And you have a great week, everybody. Get on the site and hear the bonus track, and we'll see you next week. Good night now.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.